Mic check. Mic check.
Yo.
Talking fans, we got a special pre-draft episode on a Tuesday night. So right now it's me and your boy August. Dan had some prior engagements. Most likely this won't be our only show this week. We got so much to go into with draft and recap once it's actually happening. But me and August wanted to get together and have a little chat and kind of get primed. We've been really excited about the draft coming up. So bringing August on. August, how are you, my friend?
Man, doing very well. We're about 48 hours on the mark, pretty much, from the draft kicking off. So that's definitely exciting. It always gets down to those last couple of days. It's like, man, just hurry up and get here. We've done so much talking, predicting, throwing out, you know, possible scenarios and that sort of thing. Good to actually see that it's going to happen pretty soon. So how you been doing, buddy?
Oh, I've been real good. My head's still spinning with all this draft stuff and all the prospects, but I'm going to be really happy when we're actually talking about our draft grades, and then we know the players we picked, and then I can really drill down and maybe watch some tape on those guys, you know. And the way Robinson's been, who knows if we stay at 15? I mean, it's going to be a really exciting time. So, as a Titans fan, I've been good, and just on personal level, things have been real good, man. It's warming up out here, spending more time outside. Got a little patio out back where we can have some nighttime fires and a few daddy sodas with the wife. So things are good, man.
Very nice.
So, speaking of the draft, let's go right into it. Where and how are you going to be watching the draft on Thursday, August?
Let's see, Thursday this time, I think I'm actually going to be here at the house. Got some family coming over to visit the kid. He just started 5 months yesterday. So, I think it's just going to be chilling here, maybe having a few pops and trying not to annoy everybody else as I'm running around with my hair on fire. What little I got left.
Yeah, maybe in about 20 years we'll be talking about August Jr.'s draft stock.
Oh, heck yeah, heck yeah. He's already got the footwork stuff down. He's going to be a good one.
Already loose, so at 5 months, let's see. So he's crawling around and breaking wide, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's already crushing the three-cone drill, so once he's able to stand up, man, it's over.
Oh, yeah, he's got it. what channel do you like to watch it on? Are you an ESPN or an NFL Network guy?
NFL Network guy. I can't take Mel Kiper, honestly. I kind of flip back and forth between both, and I use, like, ESPN's website for some of the instant reaction, you know, tracking a little bit of that stuff. But as far as the presentation and everything, I just massively prefer, like, Mike Mayock, and now they've got Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks and Charles Davis and all those guys on the NFL Network broadcast. That's my jam. What about you?
Yeah. I'm a cord cutter, so I will probably
yeah, me
to
too.
Do ESPN, like Sling. I still got a cable between you and me and the fence post. I still got a username and password where I can get in and watch NFL
yep,
Network if I absolutely have to. So I definitely prefer NFL Network's content. The beauty of everything is NFL.com has a live stream, which is kind of like supplemental content. So if somebody's out there
yep.
looking for a free option, but it's also a cord cutter, they're going to have it's going to have video and analysis and stuff, probably. Like I said, it's a supplemental. I go that route, and I'll probably be down in my little man cave in the basement where I can have a cigar and a beer and just kind of geek out. But hopefully me, you, and Dan will get together a little bit before our pick goes, and we can react to what's happening and record that and record our reaction as the pick comes in. That's what I'm shooting for, at least. So just put that there for our listeners.
Yeah, and everybody, rest assured, Dan has promised us both that he's going to be available. He just had some stuff he's got to cover with his sports editor job tonight and tomorrow. So he's definitely going to be in for those reaction shows. I think he might actually be in town for the second and third round on Friday.
Oh, fantastic. I'd love to get with you guys, but work schedule is not going to allow that. Not this year, but maybe next year. I'd also like to reach out with some of our listeners, and it'd just be a lot of fun if we could meet up and have a draft party somewhere.
Yeah, do a draft party.
And I think that would be fantastic. So I guess to kick it off, you got any have you looked at any other prospects or anything that is kind of shooting up the draft boards, or anybody that I feel like we've talked about everybody, but I know what a student you are with that stuff. Has there been anything that stuck out to you since we've spoken last?
Well, man, I mean, what's kind of stuck out the most is how many different teams seem to have – I mean, obviously the quarterbacks have got the first two spots locked up, and I think that's kind of thrown what everybody looked at as sort of the draft board and the kind of general rankings of guys into a little bit of disarray. Because you're going to have, you know, a couple of top – two of the best players in the draft are not going to go number one or number two. And I think that, you know, when you look at teams like even the Browns, even though they still traded down, but the 49ers, the Cowboys, you know, some of those other teams that are now in front of us, even San Diego, I think it said, what, number three?
Yes.
I think they now have guys available to them that they were just sure were going to be off the board or that they were going to have to make a move up for. So it would not surprise me at all to see a substantial number of trades. And, I mean, look, you're talking about 31 teams going in the first round. A substantial number could really be like three trades. But you look at three more trades on top of the couple that have already happened, and that's a heck of a lot of movement in the first round. And I think this could be the year where you actually see that come to fruition.
Well, you know, like you're saying, San Diego, the three is the new one. If you're not looking for
yep.
a quarterback, and we've both agreed that we don't find for Wentz is the best product or the, you know, the best prospects in the draft. So San Diego is in a really good spot, especially already having a Phillip Rivers there. I know he's getting a little longer in the tooth, and, but quarterbacks are playing longer and longer, and they didn't end up moving to LA. I know he raised a little bit of fuss about that. You'd mentioned, Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, you know, we're both fans of the Move the Sticks podcast. I listened to one today, and they probably recorded it yesterday or maybe the day before, and they were pounding hard that the Chargers pick is DeForest Buckner. Have you caught wind of that?
I know. Yes, I heard that same show. I heard it, and my heart broke a little bit as soon as I heard that, because he's become kind of my new favorite guy, I think, out of the front seven defensive, kind of prospects and just sort of overall. I mean, he really looks like a kind of can't miss, a big, powerful dude. And I mean, you put him with Jarrell Casey, some of the guys that sort of popped through last year, like Blackson, that you expect are going to step up even more this next year. Really, really like him. But, I mean, you know, they have a needed offensive line, and you got Laremy Tunsil sitting right there. You know, you have, they got a need in the secondary, especially at the safety spot. You got Jalen Ramsey there. And no matter which one they pick, that means in that fourth, fifth, sixth spot, you're going to have, you know, probably my three favorite players in terms of at the very, very top of the draft, being those guys I just mentioned, still available. Which, you know, would give a team like, us, who has a lot of prospects available, to jump back up and get somebody. Or, you know, another team to make a move. I mean, you have, you know, the Cowboys reportedly, I think PFT was reporting, or, you know, reporting somebody else was reporting, that they love Ezekiel Elliott and might be willing to move back knowing that he would still be there because running backs, you know, just aren't going to go in the top 10 that often anymore. Things are far more fluid now than I think they have been in the past three or four drafts, for sure. just because of all of that. You know, Ronnie Stanley out of Notre Dame, another offensive lineman that, you know, some teams love, some teams really, really don't like. Jack Conklin is a guy who's kind of steadily, you know, creeping up there. He's always been – it's always been a little doubtful if he would last till 15. And with teams sort of souring on Ronnie, you know, he's a guy that looks like he's sort of, you know, flying up the board, I think, more than most people recognize.
All right. I have caught some wind of that, and then they were kind of debating back and forth as far as the tackle prospects. We got the consensus top four, and I may have them out of order, but Tunsil, then Stanley, and then there's Decker or Conklin, and then they say, yeah, the drop-off is a little more substantial out of that, and the drop-off between Tunsil and Stanley might be there might be a cliff there as well, but realistically, I could see one of the four available at 15, right?
Absolutely. I think one of those guys is definitely going to be there. I mean, look, it's certainly possible that there could be two. I mean, Decker and Conklin have always been guys who are kind of between 12 and 17 is where you see them go in a lot of mocks, which, you know, kind of puts the Titans right in the thick of things for those guys. I mean, the one that really excites me, look, if you have the two quarterbacks to go first, you have San Diego, you know, take DeForest Buckner. Nobody knows what in the world the Cowboys are going to do, but, you know, they need pass rush. I mean, they could use some secondary help, but, you know, they need pass rush definitely. The Jaguars could use another pass rusher. I mean, you're looking at possibly Jalen Ramsey, the guy that I was screaming for the number one pick, falling to 6, 7, 8. You know, because you have guys like Joey Bosa, Miles Jack. You know, depending on what the medicals, you know, what one team's interpretation of the medicals on his knee are. You know, the reports came out that a lot of people are afraid he's going to need microfracture surgery, which is very, very scary for any top flight prospect. Those can go really well or they can go really bad and pretty much ruin your career.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, he might be overall the top pure pass rusher in the draft. I mean, there's a scenario working out where the guy that we wanted or I hope we wanted at number one is there at number 6, 7, or 8, and we're only looking at having to jump 7 spots to go get him. That's a really, really exciting prospect to me personally.
So – Let's say that some scenario plays out. Maybe it's 4 with the Cowboys or something. Because if San Diego does take Buckner, then maybe we can – I think personally it would be a win if we gave up half or less of what we got from the Rams to go back up there. And then if we were able to get a Ramsey or a Tunsil still – I think it's I think it's one of the best I'm going to feel post-draft in a long, long time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you throw that first rounder, say our last pick in the second round, and then like a 6th or 7th as a sweetener or something, that should get you up 7 spots, in my opinion, in this draft, or at least 5. You know, at least get you back to the top 10. And, yeah, have a shot at getting one of the premier prospects. Because for me, and we can really just go after the best player out there.
That's what's making this draft so exciting, you know. And I give a lot of credit to us having the quarterback position in place. It's just so nice not to have to, you know. Now we're building around a guy that we have confidence in, and we can actually talk about getting best player available or best prospect at a position of need, which doesn't always work, but when your roster's been as depleted as the Titans, some of the top prospects in this year's draft is still a position of need. You know, and like I'd said before, it's going to be hard to go wrong with some of the top, I don't know, 4 or 5 prospects, really, assuming they translate to the NFL like everybody's expecting them to.
Yeah, no doubt. And, I mean, you know, there's it's nice that there's a good variety of positions. You know, outside of having the three or four tackles that are up there, I mean, you have interior defensive linemen, edge rushers, cornerback slash safety, a variety of different spots that are all where we need somebody that's better than what we have on the roster right now. And it puts the Titans absolutely in a prime position. Let me ask you one thing. Vernon Hargraves was a guy we talked about last week, as a possible, might be the best cornerback left on the board when we get there. And, somebody that Dick LeBeau, I think, you really like a lot. Everybody loves him going to Tampa Bay. But I think the report came out that he failed a combine drug test for pot. Does that scare you off any, or do you not pay attention to that?
Two parts to that. My feelings on pot is pretty ambiguous. I don't smoke, but I'm an advocate for it because I think that a lot of more harmful things are already legal, and I'm for personal liberty within reason. So would I be upset that a guy smokes weed? No, but would I be upset that a guy knows that his draft prospects are on the line and he's got to pass a test and they tell him the date that it's going to happen? I think it's more of an IQ test than it really is a drug test. If you fail a piss test for weed going into the combine when they've told you well in advance, then that does scare me off.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worrisome part, because, I mean, I think probably the vast majority of our listeners and, a vast majority of NFL fans wouldn't have a problem necessarily with the guy smoking pot, other than it can keep you off the field. Even if you're in a state where it's legal, it's not legal, it's not allowed within the rules of the NFL. And, you can get suspensions from it. We've seen guys' careers get ruined over multiple tests, multiple failed drug tests for pot and for, other innocuous things, for stimulants and those sorts of issues. The one thing I'm trying to remember, and I meant to look it up beforehand, but this just sort of popped in my head. Do you get I think if you fail that combine drug test, you get put into the NFL's drug program when you get drafted.
You do.
Do you remember hearing that?
That's already one. Yes.
That is already strike one. So, I mean, he's one time lighting up away from a four-game suspension right off the bat,
which is definitely
a little worrisome.
Not to steal your thunder, but I read earlier that the NFL released that no one failed their combine drug test, that the Hargraves thing was just a rumor. So if what I read is true, everybody is coming in with a clean slate, and am I naive enough to think that there's not anybody that might have some recreational hobbies coming in? No, but I think that people are smarter and agents are smarter about getting their clients to be able to pass that test. And if you remember the CBA, I don't know if the terminology would be increased or lower. They changed the threshold where there has to be more THC in your system for it to actually be a failed test. So, but if what I read today is true, it's not an issue with Vernon or anybody else. The entire combine no one failed it. Maybe the first time
in
memory.
So maybe possible that he tested positive for some THC, but not enough to hit that threshold. Or it
absolutely
could be, once again, as NFL teams do, they all try and trash prospects they like, hoping that they'll fall to them. The most infamous and kind of well-known one being Dan Marino. The only reason he slid so far down that the Dolphins could get him was because the Dolphins were sending around bunk info that Dan Marino was a cokehead.
Right.
And that scared off a bunch of teams. Otherwise, he was going to be the top guy in that draft.
Yep. And now, there may have been some truth to it, but regardless of how it worked. And I think we're seeing...
Oh, man, it was the early 80s. Everybody was doing cocaine.
Yeah. I'm not knocking anybody's hustle, Marino is my guy. I grew up a Lions fan watching Barry Sanders and the Dolphins were my second team, and I just always thought, man, if I could just put Marino and Barry Sanders on the same team together, I'd be in good shape.
Heck yeah, the all-no ring team.
Okay, since we're divulging a little bit, I got an exercise for you. Take our current needs going into the draft, which me and you and Dan had hashed out, and we'd all had pretty much the same five, maybe a different order, okay? The entire history of the NFL, every player that's not currently on another team is open to you. Based on our current needs, who would you put on our roster?
Man, Ronnie Lott, I'll go ahead and say it. Played cornerback his first year in the league. Best safety, biggest thumper, and one of the best leaders. I mean, granted, look, it's a little bit of homerism. I grew up a diehard Montana fan. I had my 49ers Zubaz all the way through elementary school. And
right,
yeah, Ronnie Lott was
but
probably
I'm taking
my,
QB
my second
out.
Favorite
I'm,
guy on that.
I'm taking QB
exactly.
out.
That's why I'm going Ronnie Lott.
Yeah.
I mean, we need a game changer in that secondary. You know, we need a leader, a game changer, a tone setter. I would love that.
I would go in the same vein. And I thought about this earlier, and there was a part of me that thought, man, I would love to have Troy Polamalu reunited with Dick LeBeau, but starting his career. But I'm going to go earlier than that and say Rod Woodson.
Oh, dirty Rod Woodson. You're a fan of his? I was never a big Rod Woodson guy.
The career speaks for itself. So I would go Rod Woodson. There's a part of me, deep in my heart, based on our current needs, even though it wasn't our top need, I'd love to put Reggie White on the team.
That would be a good one. Or how about putting like Anthony Munoz from the Bengals to play tackle? Slide Taylor over to the right side.
Oh, a good one. Or I always liked Ogden, even though he was on my hated team. But you had to respect his game. Or how about Walter Jones?
Bruce Matthews.
Oh,
he
can
play
any
spot on that line.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be perfect. Put Bruce at the right tackle spot, and we're in much better shape. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
just the Bruce Matthews that was an All Pro, not the Bruce Matthews who was a O line coach here falling asleep in the film room.
Ooh, talk about breaking hearts, man. That was that was sad. But you give me 18 years on an offensive line with a Hall of Fame career, you know, or a Munchak.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love it. But getting back to reality, and as you were talking about all the smoke screens and stuff, I think we're seeing it more this year with the injuries. You know, does Miles Jack go high? Or what's really make of Jalen Smith, some of these top prospects? Let's say we're still at 15. And for whatever reason, and we would have to assume it's medical, if Miles Jack is there at 15, do you take him?
I mean, my whole thing with Miles Jack, I would have to be taking Steve Watterson's advice on this. He's the Titans doctor. He's one of the top, 50 knee specialists in the country. As to whether or not this issue with his knee is really as much of an issue as everybody says it's going to be. However, as a straight-up player, that would be hard to pass on. I don't know if he's necessarily the greatest fit, but a guy like that falls to you, and if he passes your medical evaluations and, the recheck that they had, you find a place to play him. He might not be the textbook size outside pass rusher, but you find a place to put him on the field. And, the production and the ability just sort of speaks for itself.
Right. I've been hearing a lot being made of how often defenses are in what's called their sub packages, nickel, dime,
yeah.
and greater, which it's up to like 65% of the time now. So we've made a lot about having our nose tackle and everything, but you're talking about a guy that's not going to be on the field but a third of the time. So if there's a guy with Jack, obviously it would be with his health concerns, but if you feel like he's likely to be able to play at a high level for 4 or 5 years, I think it would be hard to pass him. And then obviously if he's there, then chances are there's been a run on maybe another position of need. Maybe three or of the four tackles that we talked about have been taken, and you know that, because that's how guys end up falling, and somebody might move up. I still think there's going to be three quarterbacks taken in the top half of the draft. We know the two, but I think somebody's going to be desperate enough to jump up there. What if, even though it's not a position need, what if Ezekiel Elliott?
He worked hard to find a trade partner at that point. Because I think other teams, would want to jump up and take him. The only thing that probably hurts right there is, you know, they know we're not going to take him. You know, just with the DeMarco Murray trade being made. Even still, I think that, you know, you take the best player available, but you also need a 15th overall pick, number one, pick in your draft to have a spot to start. You know, as long as maybe not a quarterback. And he's just not going to start over DeMarco Murray, I don't think. And plus, you're going to take one of the big feel-good, sort of movements or moves we made of the offseason and throw it into turmoil, because you know DeMarco Murray ain't going to be happy about that. I mean, he's coming here to put his career back on track.
That's true, which I'm excited about. I'm just speculating, you know. I don't see either of those happening. But I think DeMarco's going to run with some purpose, and I think we might have. Let me think. Is he going to be the best running back in the division?
Oh yeah, I think so. I think he's better than Lamar Miller, signed with the Texans in the offseason. I mean, the Colts don't really have anybody that worries you, and neither do the Jaguars. So, I mean, yeah, I expect him to be the best running back in this division, no doubt. I expect him to be a lot more efficient than Miller is probably going to be in Houston.
Yeah, I think he's kind of a boomer bust player. Everybody was saying, oh, they're just not using him right, but like three coaching staffs went through his tenure in Miami, and I think he is what we saw, you know.
And he had a good passing attack for some of his time there, and it did make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. I do like Chris Ivory. I got to go against him now that the Jags signed him, but I think that was an underrated signing. I think he's a good player and really a stick your face in the fan kind of running back. You know, he gets some tough yards.
For sure. That was a good move for them, but I don't think he has the upside DeMarco has.
I don't either. So that I definitely feel good about DeMarco, but just kind of, you know, waxing poetic here on what might happen in the first. What's been on your mind as far as the players or put a percentage on how likely are we to trade out of 15, up or down? Just what's the odds?
I think they're pretty good that we move, especially up more than down, because I think they want to get the impact. They've got enough second-round picks. They've got enough third-round picks. I think they probably have one or two guys in mind, and if they get the feeling they're going to go in front of them, say a run starts happening, they'll pull the trigger if they can find a trade partner.
So 60%?
I'd say 70. And 70. Honestly, they made this move knowing that they could probably move up. Probably not more than five picks. I think John probably wouldn't want to give up more than what it would take to get back to 10.
I still think Cleveland's the most likely trade partner, like what we were speculating. And they're at 8, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess yeah. it really depends
on... Like I was saying last week, Paul DePodesta, that analytics movement, those guys hoard those second, third, fourth-round picks, first-round picks next year, that sort of stuff. I don't think they're going to get our next first-round pick. But, you know, they're going to be looking to add a lot of bodies to that team, and that's how you do it.
Absolutely. And I got to give you some credit, August. You were really pounding the table on analytics and you being such a big baseball fan. These guys put a higher premium on a multitude of draft picks because I'm sure they're playing the odds. The more draft picks you have, the more chances you have at drafting somebody that contributes. That has been echoed so often. Anytime I've listened to NFL sports talk, podcast, read something, and the Browns have came up, they have been saying that same exact thing. And with the Browns, knowing that they're not going to be in real contention, I could see them biting, especially on future picks.
Yeah, without a doubt. Which, you know, and that also opens up the amount of people that you can trade with, because teams traditionally in the NFL have been a little more open to trading a pick next year and treating that with a little less regard than they do worrying about the win now philosophy. If you're one of these analytics guys, you're chasing a market inefficiency. You're trying to figure out what in the NFL are people not valuing properly, and then exploiting that and using that as your way to gain superstars. Well, if teams have always been a little more likely to give up a first, a second, or a third or something the next year, then, hey, go ahead and pick that up. Because Jimmy Haslam knows they ain't turning this team around in 1 year. Okay, this is a 2-3 year plan. You just hired a new coach. You still got to find a quarterback. You're still digging yourself out of holes with several other draft picks that have gone wrong. So they have to go that direction.
And well, I think what drives that is the such short leash and win now mentality. A lot of coaches and general managers can't think even two seasons down the road, you know? So they devalue those. But if you got a fresh front office, analytics focused, and I have to assume Haslam has to be smart enough to know, like you're saying, it's a 3 or 4 year process before to really judge them, that might be a team that you could dangle something in the 2017 or even 2018 draft and they like it, because the thing about a future draft pick, if you know you still have a job, is you know exactly what that value is going to be or at a floor. You know, there's no fluctuation to it. It's not like buying a stock where you're like, well, I don't know what it's going to do in 2 years. If we say we're going to give you X, Y, and Z, or like the second round draft pick for the next year, you know at worst what that value is. That's predicated on us like winning the Super Bowl or whatever, which if that happens, then who cares what picks we gave up in the future? It obviously worked. So yeah, that's what I'm excited about seeing, you know, a little shift in maybe some of the front office's headspace, you know. I think they probably make the most sense. And then you had mentioned the Cowboys at 4, which if the Chargers take DeForest Buckner and they're sitting there at 4 and you can have your choice with Rams, Utah, blah, 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 then that is going to be a hot spot. So it's going to be a really, really interesting first round, you know. One thing I wanted to ask, is there any player that you are just afraid of or hate, don't want under any circumstances? Is there a guy that this draft that might have gotten a little buzz? And I'm not talking strictly first round or 15 pick, just total that you would remove off your draft board?
I don't think so. Joey Bosa is just weird to me. You know, I don't, there's, you know, questions about some of the production you know, for just how highly touted of a player he was. And then just, I mean, you know, seems, I don't know, sort of standoffish, and I don't know, something just smells fishy with him. So, I mean, he's a guy that personally probably pass up on and let somebody else take a shot at. But, I mean, you know, if he fell all the way to 15, that would be kind of hard to do. But he's probably the closest, I would say, to that when you look at, you know, non-injury-related issues. And Robert Kendiche out of Ole Miss, obviously, you know, because there was the really weird jumping off a balcony incident on spring break. And, you know, just kind of that left a really weird taste in everybody's mouth. And, you know, from everything we heard, he didn't necessarily interview that well up in Ole Miss. And then Christian Hackenberg, I guess, would be the other one. Those are probably the three guys that I wouldn't, that I just wouldn't feel comfortable taking. Period.
Any reason for us to take a quarterback this year?
Probably not. I mean, a little bit later on, maybe somebody to come in and compete. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen with Mettenberger. My guess is he's going to stick as a third. You know, we brought in Matt Castle. He's going to be sort of the veteran guy. But I don't know. I mean, quarterback's one of those spots. I don't mind seeing a team draft a quarterback like basically every 2 years, even if it's, if it's a later round developmental thing, just to get a guy in and see what he's got. You know, one guy is slightly related to that, who played a little bit of quarterback in college and actually came up. We were talking a little bit before the show. He came up in the press conference that Mularkey and John Robinson had today. Is Braxton Miller out of Ohio State. A guy who's going to play wide receiver in the league, but you know was had a pretty successful run at the quarterback position in Ohio State, and Mike Mularkey made the point that he felt like Braxton Miller probably had more value to him and his team than he did to a lot of other offensive coordinators and head coaches because of the history he has with guys making that position switch. Whether you're talking about T.J. Ward or not T.J. Hines Ward. Yeah, Hines, you know, played college, played quarterback at Georgia, and then Cordell Stewart, you know, who was, you know, sort of master of the trick plays with Mularkey up in Pittsburgh.
And Antoine Randall, he played college
Antoine
quarterback.
Randall. Yeah, so Indiana, I think.
I think so. Now, it scares me a little bit. Like, I guess if that's a late round guy and he's definitely on like, I got to prove my worth kind of kick, and you can put a little gadget play here and there. But, and I'm not saying that Mularkey did this, but I'm not really interested in a gadget offense, you know, having a couple weird wrinkles. And what I like about things like that is them saying, we recognize this guy has a certain skill set that we might be able to exploit a certain matchup on. Taking advantage of something like that, I am definitely for. And when it comes to Braxton Miller, that's a big guy and a big fast guy, right? Isn't he 6'5"?
Yeah, I believe so. 6'4", somewhere in there. Yeah, I mean, and a big, you know, thick built, strong possession receiver who, has some speed. Ran a nice 40 time.
So that that could be intriguing, but I would think more like fourth round, maybe fifth. I don't know. What's your thoughts on?
He's 6'1", 6'1", 4'5", 40 is what he ran. And I mean, look, you know, we talked about the guys that Mularkey's had success with. All of those guys were full time players. You know, I mean, Braxton Miller's not like a wildcat sort of Pat White. Sort of pick. I think you take him expecting him to be a full-time wide receiver, but knowing that he could give you some flexibility in terms of some gadget plays, which is the thing that, you know, Mularkey likes. He always has some trick plays and, you know, some sort of specialty stuff that he bakes into that power offense that he runs. That's why he likes to call it an exotic power offense. You know, that it's not just so regimented. And,
exotic.
That's why I think he likes. Yeah, exotic Smash Mouth, exactly. That's what not a Smash Mouth album. That's what he does with those dudes.
I almost said erotic, and that's really taking it down a different path.
Oh my, yeah. That's not good. No. It's not gonna be an erotic offense.
No. I don't know. I think I just dug myself in a hole with that. There's nothing I can say to get out of it. Well, but you see guys like that, and you put them on, what they would do is just try to set that play up. You know, you'd see them, like, fake an end around, and it'd be a handoff to Murray up the middle. But the wide receiver would motion.
Yeah.
It's called jet motion, right? Then you'd do that a couple times, and then when you would get the defender that's supposed to follow that motion to stay home to stuff the box, that's when you hand it off on the jet. And then you work that in a little bit. And then eventually, if you have that guy on the jet motion that's a guy like a Braxton Miller, you have a pass option for him to take. And then it's kind of like, you know, that's what I love so much about football is the chess match and thinking about something down the road. Like, there's plays that get ran for the sole purpose of running a similar play later on, you know, to get the defense – And defense does the same thing. So I like it. It's definitely not – this is a draft we need to hit a lot of doubles on, I feel like, and not swing for the boom or bust kind of players. But that's kind of how I'm looking at it, is get some guys that will contribute and hopefully some starters, especially on them first four or five picks August. I really think it's crucial. If we can count on three or four of our first five or six guys to be in our starting lineup, then I know that's a lot of rookies to count on, but we're going to have two or three offense, two or three defense. I mean, we got holes that we have to fill, and we're still going to be a young team, and we got to get these guys we got to get guys that can produce. You know, one thing I wanted to ask, is there anybody in the second round, you know, we got the three picks, assuming we stay there, that you are, that you're excited about, somebody you would stand on the table for like Dowell Loggins did with Rusty?
Oh, God, Rusty.
The Rusty Rifle.
Oh, God. Yes, and... Oh, man, hang on.
If I had to guess, and maybe I'm on the wrong round, but with all the conversations we've had, second-round player, I'm going to say that nose tackle out of Louisiana, or Louisiana Tech.
Yeah,
like.
Yep.
Is that the guy? What was his name?
I was trying to pull his page up real quick. Yeah, Vernon Neal, I think. Is that right, or is he one of the sacks? Man, there's been so many of them. Go on,
I
sorry,
know,
man.
I'm
that's running a little bit slow.
That's all right. It was definitely, you're close, but that's not ringing a bell.
Nose tackle.
Vernon Butler.
Vernon Butler, there we go. I have the first name right. Yes, and, you know, not a guy I've seen in any first-round mocks. With having three picks in the second round, yeah, he would be the guy that I'd be pounding the table for. Just because I think he changes the dynamic of the entire front seven. And he makes things so much easier for Arakpo, Morgan, Casey, Blackson, whatever other pass rusher we add. He keeps Avery Williamson clean. And you know, I think you'd see a breakout year from him. That's my guy in the second round, which means categorically it's not going to happen. But, yeah, he's the guy I'm pounding the table for.
Right. All right. Well, Let's take it in a different direction, because I know we've talked about everybody that I'm sure we could possibly talk about. Let's just look forward to having actual picks to talk about, and then we can critique and break down. And, you know, we may have to put an explicit tag on some of these draft ones. You know, I don't know how. Yeah, especially if we're recording live. Let's go back. Now, I have heard that it takes, 3 years to judge a draft? I'm sure you've heard a similar thing. And all the draft grades that we're going to give and the draft picks coming out of this draft really don't mean a hill of beans, because it's just speculation. So I am going to go back And here is our 2013 draft, August, and I want you to give a grade on it now, okay? That gives us, what is that, 13, 14, that's three seasons of them on the roster. And
yep.
It'll be no surprise to anybody why we've been a bad team. 2013, Chance Warmack, first round. I'll just go down the list. You guys know the rounds. Justin Hunter, Bleedy Ray Wilson, and then Xavier Gooden, both third-round picks. Schwenke, LeVar Edwards, Khalid Wooten, and Damian Stafford. What would you grade that draft?
A D.
A D?
I mean,
because we've still got Chance and Justin and
Chance
Schwenke.
Chance has shown flashes.
Stafford.
Chance has shown flashes. Yeah, Stafford's had some good spots, but, I mean, Chance is the only one that's an established starter. Really out of that group. And even he has had some struggles. I mean, you can't really count him as a home run hit, especially taking a guard that high. So, yeah, we'll give that one a D.
Okay. I'm with you because Chance is still starting, but we still have questions at that position. Hunter in the second round, wide receiver, we still have some questions there. I had hopes for Bleedy, but I've definitely cooled off on that. Gooden's not on the roster. Schwenke, I don't think, is a starting caliber center. But I am sad for him that he was forced into a starting position because there was nobody worth a damn that he had to beat out. LeVar Edwards, I think, is out of the league. I remember we traded him to the Cowboys for nothing. Khalid Wooten is out of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Damian Stafford is probably the best value in the whole round because we got a guy that actually contributes on special teams and can come in certain situations in the seventh round. Do you even want to know the 2012 draft? Do you remember that? All right, this one's rough. It starts out okay. Kendall Wright. Zach Brown.
Yep.
Cody Sensabaugh, Taylor Thompson, Markell Martin, and Scott Solomon.
Whew! Man, yeah, starts out all right and then just nosedives.
One guy on the roster, August.
Yeah. Yeah, after 4 years, that's not a good look.
No.
After four very unsuccessful years.
All right. Give it a grade. F plus.
Does Man, I give it a D. I give it a D because of Kendall, but that's
Kendall?
The only reason. Otherwise, it would be a straight up F.
Yeah. I don't know if I can give a draft that only has one player still left on it 4 years later anything higher than, okay, I'll say a D. D minus. I'm giving it a D minus.
All right,
here is 2014. Luan Sankey, Daquan Jones, Marquestin Hough, Avery Williamson, and Zach Mettenberger. Now, a lot of these guys, I think every one of them is still on the roster, but we're only 2 years into this production. How do you feel about that? I feel better about that draft than I did the previous two.
Agreed. I mean, Sankey's an unmitigated bust, but the rest of them, I mean,
yep.
That's not – It's not too bad of a class at all.
Williamson's the starter. Mettenberger.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give up on the guy, even though who knows.
He can't win a game
I
in
feel
the NFL.
Like he can't. No, he can't. But it's not like we had a roster that was really going to win any more than two or three games around the kid, apparently. Luan I like.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Daquan I like, too. Slowly – I don't know what it is about the guy, but they're slowly figuring out ways to get him in the rotation. You know what I'm saying? Like
– Yeah. I think we were all looking at last year that we were hoping he'd break out a little bit more, and it didn't quite happen, but he still has a future on this team, you know.
I mean, today he's a starter. So, of that draft, we got Luan, Daquan Jones, and Avery Williamson. Three of the six are starters. Now they've been starters on a bad team, and I'd love to see some competition at those positions. But
yeah,
for the most part, they're not positions that we're necessarily really crawling all over ourselves to replace. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, agree.
It's not like we're looking for Williamson or Lawan's replacement or DaQuan Jones right now. Now, the whole tackle debate that we've had is not necessarily an indictment on Lawan. It's that we do not have an answer at the right side of the line. So I'm going to give him a pass. I'm going to give that draft a B minus.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, B-.
B-, three starters, and then Mettenberger, I think he showed some traits that if they can kind of coddle and get into something. Let's see, what else? Okay. All right, Ox. Point blank, is Mike Mularkey the worst coach in the NFL?
Oh. No, I don't think he's the worst coach in the NFL. I think he's definitely not a sexy hire.
You know what I'm getting at. You know what I'm getting at. I'm that head coach. I'm sure somebody's got a POS wide receiver coach, or you know, Sean Jefferson's got a job somewhere, but I'm talking head coach.
But head coach, man, I still don't know. I don't think he's the worst. I'd have to sit down and think about who necessarily is worse. But no, I don't think he's the worst coach in the worst head coach in the NFL. I mean, look, dude, the guy had a mediocre tenure as a head coach in Buffalo, had one really bad year in Jacksonville, but had a stellar run as an offensive coordinator with the Steelers, and then with the Falcons. And you know, he needs a really good roster. He needs an offense that's built, you know, for his style and kind of for what he does. But you know, there's some hope there. I think I don't think it's all that bad, and I don't think that Mike Mularkey inherently ruins a team, which is what you know a lot of fans sort of seem to be afraid of. It's very much kind of a wait and see thing with him. I mean, what do you think?
I think it's an upgrade on Wisenhunt. Now, I did not feel that way when we hired Wisenhunt. I kind of drank the Kool-Aid a little bit, but the more I tried to dig into X's and O's and tapes, I saw time and time again of Wisenhunt putting our guys in bad situations due to whatever you want to say it. And even though the end result looked like crap, I feel like the team was a better coach team under Mularkey than Wisenhunt. So I'm going to say he is not the worst coach in the NFL, but I don't have an answer for you, but who would be. There's a part of me that still kind of feels it's Caldwell in Detroit, and he's just got a better roster than we have.
I mean, look, Rex Ryan has wrecked teams with good rosters. I know he had some success at other parts in his Jets years, but he's been way more of a problem than an asset the past several years. So, I mean, until he can prove that he can win again, I mean, he's a bottom five coach in the league, in my opinion. He'd be a top five coordinator if he went back to that spot. But as a head coach, he's getting further and further removed from doing anything good.
Oh, I know. I view it this way, and I'm just going to throw a few numbers out there. Of the 32 head coaches, I think there's four or five head coaches that are heads above the rest. Four or five coaches that are out of their depth and will not have another shot at it. Normally, you know, just saying.
Yeah.
So that leaves us, let's say, 10. So that's 22 coaches that's just kind of in the middle. And I would put Mularkey in there. I feel like he's not gonna take a bad roster and make them competitive. But I feel like with a decent roster, he is going to have just as much success as about 22 of the other coaches in the league. And I put a lot of stock in roster. I feel like there's kind of a log jam with coaching. And it does matter, but if you have Well, Belichick had a losing record until he got Tom Brady. So, and he's going to go down in history as maybe the best coach ever. I'm not saying Mularkey's on that. I'm not saying he's there, but I personally feel like if you put if you gave Mularkey a roster that can win 10 games, we'll win 10 games. If you give him a roster that can only win 3 games, we'll only win 3. I don't think he's going to drag us down, but I don't think he's going to lift us up. I think the onus has to be on us getting better players.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to go a long way, and I think he's a guy who can win with a good roster. So now we just got to see how quickly Jobber Robinson can put together a winning roster. Is basically what it's going to come down to.
Well, but we're going to know a lot.
He's not one of those coaches who can elevate a team that's, you know, not necessarily all that good. I mean, love him or hate him, that's what makes Bill Belichick, I mean, probably is one of the best coaches, if not the best coach of all time, just because he's won so many different ways. You know,
right.
He won with Tom Brady as a game manager, with a defense first team. He won, with a spread style offense. He's won, you know, with a smash mouth defense. He's won with a bend but don't break defense. Yeah, he won all those games with Matt Castle as quarterback. Like, I mean, just no matter what people throw at him, what happens, the dude just finds a way to win and to collect rings and get there. Now, he's also most likely the coach to get you drug in front of a federal grand jury, but they ain't taking away his rings.
Well, he's the type of coach that's probably that top 4 or 5 I'm talking about that's going to take a 10-11 win roster and turn it into 14 wins and maybe a Super Bowl. You know, he's not taking a 5-win team. He's not taking a Titans-esque roster and done, went deep into the playoff. So we'll have a ton more of information by this time next week. I hope that we're able to get at least maybe one or two more episodes, and maybe we'll do them a little quicker than this one. I know how long-winded I get. And on Thursday night, just kind of hit on who was taken, who we took, maybe who's going to be left, and then try to do a little something each day of the draft. So August, let's wrap it up. Is there anything that that I might have missed or that you needed the floor for?
No, man, I think we've hit it. I just appreciate everybody listening, and make sure you subscribe. And, yeah, we'll do some little pop-up episodes as the draft is going on, so you guys be on the lookout for that. And if you go ahead and subscribe, you'll be guaranteed not to miss a single one. You don't have to wait for me to maybe do a post on the site or maybe forget to do it like I did last week. You won't have to worry about missing an app. So that's all
for me. Hey, I'm not going to judge, August. We're all grateful for the effort you put into it. So just to echo your sentiment, please, guys, make sure to like and subscribe us. Follow the three of us on Twitter. Every episode I've been getting a few more people following me, but I know there's several of you out there that I would love to have follow myself, at Drunkish Droog, and then we got Dan, at Danomite TN, and then August West_MCM. So for the three of us and Titans fans everywhere, we'll talk to you soon, and we're going to have a draft episode on Thursday, so let's go win some stuff.
We own all of your drafts.
All your drafts belong to us.